Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Orleans, Cape Cod. BirdwatchersGeneralStore.com.
And proudly sponsored by Ocean State Bird Club. There are good things ahead here in Rhode Island as we hatch safe and creative ways to keep in touch with our members. Get the latest sightings and birding-related events, whether they're in person or virtual. Find us on Facebook and online at OceanStateBirdClub.org. Ocean State Bird Club.
Good morning. Welcome to our show, number 796. We'll be putting some focus on fall migration today by way of a mystery bird contest involving a migration superstar, plus a superstar birder guest who will explain more about the mysteries of migration, starting with a story about Canada geese heading north. It's September, and it's when we sometimes hear reports of Canada geese apparently heading in the wrong direction. According to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, there are several possible reasons for this, the most likely of which is that these are family groups moving around now that the yearlings can fly in search of feeding grounds. Around this time of year, late summer, the adult geese become flightless as they molt their wing feathers. That usually takes about 6 weeks, during which time the geese remain grounded. But once the young have learned to fly, and the parents can fly again, the whole clan will blast off from their nesting grounds to find more productive feeding areas. And that could be in any direction, including due north, before temperatures start to drop all across the continent and the big southbound migration begins. And that's the sound of that migration champion to which we alluded moments ago. It's our mystery bird, and it's a preview of our mystery bird contest coming along a little bit later in the show. Our mystery bird is a small and slender bird of the shoreline. In breeding plumage, it has a solid black cap, a light gray back, pale gray underparts, white cheeks, red legs, and a red bill. Feeds mostly on small fish and crustaceans, usually plunging from on high into the water to grab its prey. Our bird is famous for its long yearly migration from near the bottom of the world to near the top of the world and back again. It may see more daylight than any other creature on Earth. Our mystery bird contest coming along in just a bit, and a beautiful Droll Yankees new generation 13-inch metal finch sock feeder will be our prize this morning. And yes, it does include the Droll Yankees lifetime warranty against squirrel damage.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Here are some of the stories and videos we have for you right now on our TalkingBirds.com website and on our Facebook page. Skywatch Bird Rescue in Wilmington, North Carolina, rescued about 200 birds from Hurricane Isaiah. Check out our link to an amazing slideshow demonstrating their efforts. The latest Mike O'Connor newspaper article relates Mike's observations of a bird whose plumage changes are pretty much limited to a variation in eye color. Hint, its nickname is Thunder Pumper. And please pardon us for blowing our own horn a little bit here this morning. Because AARP's website is featuring an article this week entitled Four Top Podcasts for Bird Lovers. And our humble Talkin' Bird show is among the four, which also includes the ABA's American Birding Podcast, Birdwatcher's Digest's Out There with the Birds, and the Bird Note Podcast. Thank you, AARP and Terry Ward, who wrote the article, for making us part of the big four there. You can find the piece at aarp.org or on our TalkinBirds.com website and Facebook page. Now let's blow an even bigger horn. And it's by way of saluting and thanking more Talkin' Birds ambassadors, amazing Talkin' Birds listeners who have agreed to let us send us some of their little info cards that they hand out or send out to their friends, neighbors, and fellow birders, and help us get the word out about our show and about our aim of promoting birds and conservation. And thank you to Thomas B. from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, close to a couple of big flyways, the Susquehanna River and the Appalachian Mountains. Thank you so much, Thomas. And thank you to Eli Hansen from Hortonville, Wisconsin. Eli, who is one of our youngest ambassadors, was a mystery bird contest a few weeks ago. He won the contest, and then he joined our ambassador's family. How cool is that? Thank you so much, Eli. And let's say hey to Leah. That would be Leah Furch from Lake Worth Beach, Florida. She says, new listener, fairly new to birding, very much enjoying both. Thank you so much, Leah. And thank you, Roy Orbison. Talking Birds listeners, how about it? Won't you join Leah and Eli and Thomas in our Talking Birds family? It's easy to be an ambassador and easy to become one. Just click the Get Involved tab at the top of the TalkinBirds.com homepage and then choose Become an Ambassador. Meanwhile, if you'd like to chat, share stories and pictures and videos and stuff like that, check out our Talking Birds flock at Facebook.com. Still to come on our show today, we'll welcome back, after too long an absence, one of our favorite guests, David Clapp, who will school us about some of the magic and mysteries of migration, bird migration, that is. Plus, we'll catch up with Mike O'Connor in our Let's Ask Mike segment about some Cooper's hawks causing big trouble in one of our listeners' backyards. And up next, today's featured feathered friend, presented by Birdwatching Magazine. For more than a quarter century, Birdwatching has been North America's premier magazine about wild birds and birding.
I say, let's have a chat. What do you think?
Well, what sort of chat you have in mind?
Well, I was thinking of a yellow-breasted chat.
Well, for many years, experts were telling us that the yellow-breasted chat was a warbler. And the reaction to this from a lot of people was, well, okay, if you say so, but isn't it kind of big to be a warbler? It's about 7 inches long with a wingspan of about 10 inches. Pretty big. Well, guess what? Genetic data studies now suggest that the yellow-breasted chat is not a warbler at all, although it's still considered a member of the same family. So try to picture our featured feathered friend. The male and female look pretty much alike, by the way. As the name suggests, it has a bright yellow chest. It also has a bright yellow throat, an olive-green back, and white spectacles. In other words, white eye rings with a line on top projecting toward the bill, so it kind of looks like it has glasses on, backwards. Its bill is short, thick, and black. Its belly is white, and it has a long tail. Its legs and feet are a dark blue-black. And the size, again, about 7 inches long with about a 10-inch wingspan. Here's the song and call of the yellow-breasted chat. There he is, the yellow-breasted chat, this week's featured feathered friend here on Talkin' Birds. Welcome again to our show number 796. It's a show we'll remember because it contains David Clapp as our special guest this morning, and we can actually see him, but more about that later. We can see him even though he is not here in the studio, but I think we'll be able to hear him. Let's find out. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Ray. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. It's great to have you back again. It's been a kind of a long absence here, but we're happy to hear.
It's been a long year so far.
A long, strange year that's not over yet. But we are deeply into migration season by many measurements, at least here in late summer, early September. I wanted to ask you about flyways, David. We've traditionally heard about the Atlantic and Pacific flyways and the Mississippi flyway, and this is where all the birds go during migration time. But that's kind of an outmoded concept, is it, based on ducks and geese mostly?
There's some real generalities that are probably true in that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you have your two coasts, your Pacific and Atlantic coast, any bird that's going to migrate over land near the coast and gets blown to the water is going to stop and go down the coast. So it certainly looks like they're coastal. And many of them, the sandpipers and the especially young birds, young land birds, not sandpiper types, but regular forest birds, they'll get, the young ones especially, will get to the edge of the coast and then migrate down using the coastline. So there is a sort of a coastal migration, but a lot of the hawks and geese and ducks and things use mountain ranges and take advantage of the air bouncing off the mountain ranges. And so you can see a lot of hawk watch facilities set up, a lot of people out looking for hawks in like the Goshute Mountains near Elko, Nevada, or here in New Hampshire or Western Massachusetts, and even what we call mountains, low hills, birds still use them to travel.
People often ask about raptors flying and why the raptor migration watching is so much bigger in the fall than in the spring.
In the fall, they wait for the right weather conditions more. They're a little more patient. And then they sort of just glide along and take advantage of the weather. In the spring, it's all about reproduction, territorial stuff, and they tend to fly through things. And so they'll fly through weather conditions. They're just a little more concentrated in the fall, and you can kind of depend on them going through certain areas. They are using the same paths pretty much. We see more birds actually here on the outer Cape Cod, Massachusetts. We see more birds in the spring going north than we see coming south. Our birds seem to go up the coastline and then back down through the middle part of the state or the Hudson Valley or something like that. But I think it's just that they concentrate in the fall. They travel with the weather and they're not in any hurry, so they can wait for the weather.
Okay, well, talking about those pathways, would it be fair to say when we maybe talk about not raptors so much, but songbirds and other migrating birds, that the word clockwise really comes into play when we talk about the southern migration versus the northern migration?
And by clockwise, you're referring to?
To the fact that they're going maybe down the Atlantic coast on the way south and then more inland on the way north.
There's been a lot of studies on what they use for sighting and whether it's a repositioning of the sky because the Earth has moved a quarter of a way around its orbit and they're seeing stars from a little bit of a different angle, or whether there's just the way they read magnetic fields. There's a lot of stuff not known about this. There's a whole lot not known about how they orient, how they do things. An older bird can remember. If you get a long-distance migrant, a sandpiper, like white-rumped sandpiper going all the way to Tierra del Fuego, or terns that fly 4,000 or 5,000 miles in each direction or more, these birds, as they get older, will remember certain things. But how they start, what they think of, they probably use magnetic, solar, ultraviolet light, polarized light, and magnetic fields to work to figure out where they are. So, and geography. So, I don't know the answer to that or any of it.
Okay, well, it's a pretty good try there. I was looking at
I've asked a lot of birds, but they're just sort of bird brains. They can't tell me anything.
Clamming up, beaks all closed. I've been looking at this new BirdCast platform that the Cornell Lab has. It's pretty amazing, predicting migratory patterns. And I looked at this last night, and I can see this enormous flight kind of over the Chicago area, that part of the country, so much more than the East Coast, for example. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, the Great Lakes, to some extent, serve as a giant funnel. They start in Canada. They come down. They're squeezed by the lakes. They work their way along the edge of Lake Michigan. And there will be these essentially giant rainstorms. When you think about the human body or a bird's body, it's mostly water. And when they fly, it looks like a rainstorm. And you can pick it up on radar and see water on radar. And so this is what you see, these big clouds of moisture, which is basically organic stuff inside birds, moving through these areas. And there are times in April coming onto the Texas coast or up near McGee Marsh in Ohio, going north at Point Pelee in Ontario, where you can see birds migrating by the water content of the air, by the radar picture. And that's kind of what happens with this. That central flyway, to call it that, historically, the central part of the North America was all grasslands. And you get a lot of sandpipers that are really grass pipers that use that area. Curlews and godwits and whimbrels and things that come down the middle of that particular of our country, right through that area. And even though we've turned a lot of it into cornfields and urban areas, the the flight patterns don't change that fast. They're still going where they used to go. But I think what you see when you see that Chicago plume are birds that are sort of funneled in by the Great Lakes and then fly into radar. Probably airport radar probably sees a lot of these things.
Well, I know this is too big a question for a short session like this, but I wonder if you'd give me a little quick insight on, because people always want to know this, obviously, where migration started in the first place. Did it start from the north to the south or south to the north? What's your clap capsule about that?
Well, there's still two schools of thought, one going each way. But probably when, I have a hummingbird at my feet here. When the continents are drifting, they're floating upon a fairly thick pudding of magma, but yet they move a little bit. Australia's moving north at about 1.75 inches a year toward the equator, getting hotter and hotter. And we're all moving, and the mountain ranges come from things crashing into each other. So as the glaciers most of this tectonic stuff goes back way before our birds. Most of our birds migrate based on the receding line of glaciation over the last, say, 400,000 years. As the glaciers melted, it opened up more territory that was unused. And so they would move out of wintering areas into these new areas to breed. Mm-hmm. And the new areas were full of young plants and full of insects. And as the glaciers receded, they continued to move forward. And we've seen glaciers receding now, heavily receding for maybe 10,000 years, 15. And they've come and gone over the last 400,000 years. So a lot of it's glaciers and flooding. Look at a map of the United States 70 million years ago, and there was only the West Coast mountains and the East Coast mountains. The whole middle was water. And these kind of things, as they recede and as they develop, cause populations to move. So it's probably tied into great glaciation and long-term climate change.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating stuff, and that's David Clapp. David was the leader for many years of a couple of Audubon sanctuaries here in Massachusetts, and a leader for many years as well with Smithsonian, give me the correct terminology.
Smithsonian Journeys.
Smithsonian Journeys, and he joins us here. And the reason we could see David is because we have him on Zoom this morning.
It's great to be seen on radio.
Thanks for joining the experiment, David.
A pleasure.
David Clapp here, and coming up next on Talkin' Birds, our mystery bird contest in just 1 minute.
There's a crisis facing us today that reaches far beyond borders or boundaries. It's our planet, and it's in trouble. Scientists estimate that climate change will increasingly alter our planet, and many of our land and water resources will be at risk. If you're ready to make a difference that lasts, to help protect nature and preserve life, visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org today.
Hi, this is Talkin' Bird Senior Producer Debbie Bleacher with tips for safe birding during COVID-19. First, we're talking COVID, not Corvid. That's the virus, not the crow family. So if you see a blue jay at your bird bath, you're okay. Second, wash your hands often, but not in the bird bath. Third, on the trail, don't share binoculars. Cover your nose and mouth. And keep a 6-foot turkey vulture wingspan between yourself and others. Thanks. Let's keep one another healthy out there.
That is our mystery bird. It's a small and slender bird of the shoreline. In breeding plumage, it has a solid black cap, a light gray back, pale gray underparts, white cheeks, red legs, and a red bill. It feeds mostly on small fish and crustaceans, usually plunging from on high into the water to grab its prey. Our bird is famous for its long yearly migration from near the bottom of the world to near the top of the world. Kind of crazy, so it seems, but it's true, and it seems to work for our mystery bird. What is that bird? Tell us definitively or take your guess. No correct answer means a drawing will determine our winner, because we are determined to have a winner, even if we don't get a correct answer. The number is 781-837-4900. That's 781-837-4900. And our prize is the Droll Yankees New Generation 13-inch metal finch sock. It combines the attraction of a finch sock with the durability of metal, and it holds a full pound of Niger seed, a.k.a. thistle seed, and yes, it does come with the Droll Yankees Lifetime Warranty against squirrel damage from Droll Yankees, makers of the world's best bird feeders. Do call us as soon as you can on our Mystery Bird Contest so that we will simply have time to do that contest. 781-837-4900 is the number. Meanwhile, we will check in with Mike O'Connor at the famous Birdwatchers General Store as we go back to Cape Cod for the second time this morning. Let's ask Mike live in just 1 minute.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
My name is Alan Rand, and I'm calling from Cleveland, Ohio. What I like about being a Talkin' and Birds ambassador is the ability to go and share the show with others and to share what I've learned and hopefully get them turned on to the show as well. Becoming a Talkin' Birds ambassador is a great idea for many reasons, mainly because you'd be able to go out and express the way you feel about the show. It's also a great format for being able to meet new people.
Talkin' Birds listeners, we hope you'll join our ambassadors family. It's easy to do. Just visit our website, talkinbirds.com. Click on Get Involved at the top of the homepage and then choose the Become an Ambassador option at talkinbirds.com. Join today, and thanks.
Time to connect with Mike O'Connor down there on beautiful Cape Cod at the Birdwatchers General Store. And good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Ray. Did David Clapp say, if you look at a map of the United States, 70 million year old map, he must be older than I thought.
He was holding the map. You know, we did this on Zoom, so I could see David.
He took it out of his glove box and
yeah, he lifted up this thing with these really raggedy kind of edges on it. And I thought, I wonder what that is. And I guess you have figured it out.
I knew it. He's holding up well.
He is. He's not here to defend himself against all of these attacks right now, but we'll give him a chance another time to retaliate. But meantime, one of our listeners down in Connecticut, Sarah, contacted us asking you about these Cooper's hawks, or she thinks maybe they're sharpshins. She's not sure, but she is sure they're causing trouble in her backyard. And this is kind of an age-old problem. Not as old as David's map, but still pretty old. So people ask this all the time. What do you say?
Well, yeah, hawks, two famous hawks for attacking backyard birds, Cooper's and Sharpshin's hawk. Both of those hawks, their population has increased the last couple of decades, mainly because we finally got rid of DDT back in the 70s, but also our habitats changed. We have more trees, and those birds are woodland birds, so they're taking advantage of the habitat, but they're also taking advantage of the food that we offer in our backyard. And it can be distressing for people, and there's a whole bunch of thoughts of what to do. Some people just say, keep the feeder birds wild and on their toes and don't do anything and you know, root for the hawks if you want. Still a bird. Mm. So, but that doesn't work for everybody. Nobody wants to lose a cardinal or a bluebird. So the other thought is just remove your feeder. Nobody wants to do that either, especially a guy who sells bird seed for a living.
Exactly.
But sometimes these attacks are temporary. The hawks are moving about, and if you remove the feeder, the birds move about, and they clear your area for maybe a week or two. Then you can put them back, and sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I've tried both of those, and they both seem to come back. Mm-hmm. What I do, my feeders are kind of in a wooded area, and you can move your feeders to a more wooded area because these birds move fast and they fly quickly, and if there's obstacles in their way, it slows them down and makes their presence known, and so you can move your feeders to a more sheltered area. A lot of people don't want to do that because they have them in the open where they can see them, and also it keeps the squirrels away. So that's kind of a trade-off. But my last suggestion is what I do when the hawks become a problem is I go and I put out peanuts in the shell. I go buy these, like, with the baseball players eat or they used to eat in the circus. You used to buy when you could go to, like, an event, a baseball game.
Yeah.
And put those out on a tray, a scatter them about, and that'll bring in crows and blue jays. And these two birds hate hawks. They'll sound the alarm, they'll scream, they'll alert not only the birds in your yard, but every bird within a 7-mile radius of what's going on. So if there's a Cooper's or Sharpshin hawk patrolling the area, they'll get wind of it, and they'll scream, and all the other birds will be on alert. So that's what I do. I actually draw the big birds that people complain about, crows and jays, the bully birds. but that protects the other birds with it. Sound the alarm.
All right.
The penis in the shell.
And I know you have some of those Coopers in your yard now. We don't have time for now. Maybe next time we can talk about that, how that worked out in your yard.
Oh, that's kind of a fun story. Sure, I'll do that.
All right. Mike O'Connor there, the famous Birdwatchers General Store on Cape Cod.
For over a quarter century, Birdwatching Magazine has been North America's premier magazine about wild birds and birding. Whether you enjoy birds in your backyard or far afield, you'll find information in every issue to help you find, track, identify, and understand birds. Regular contributors include Ken Kaufman, David Sibley, Pete Dunn, Laura Erickson, and other birding experts. Learn more at birdwatchingdaily.com.
We're back here to the Mystery Bird Contest. That would be the bird we're trying to identify. We'll give a shorter rendition of the clues here. A small and slender bird of the shoreline and breeding plumage. It has a solid black cap, a light gray back, pale gray underparts, white cheeks, red legs, and a red bill. It's kind of a migration superstar champion. It's our mystery bird, and the number to call is 781-837-4900 for a chance to win that beautiful Droll Yankees New Generation 13-inch metal finch sock as our prize. And Megan is somewhere in Arkansas. Good morning, Megan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Whereabouts, you want to tell us where in Arkansas? Or
I am in Mountain View right now. That's North Central Arkansas.
North Central, okay. The Razorbacks.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. It's our mystery bird contest. Since we're not talking football here, we're talking birds. And you heard the clues and all that, Megan, on our mystery bird. What do you say it is?
I'm gonna say an Arctic tern.
An Arctic tern is a beautiful answer, and it's even the correct answer. What an amazing bird this is. It flies from the Arctic to the Antarctic, and instead of migrating to somewhere warm like the equator, it goes all the way down and rests on the ice. It's a kind of a crazy, amazing story, but, it's an amazing story. What can you say about it beyond that? The Arctic tern is the correct answer. We don't have a regular bonus question here, but we have a question we were going to ask David Clapp. Would you like to try it?
Sure.
This doesn't require any bird knowledge at all. It's just kind of a fun question. What is the name of the Twitter bird logo? What is the name of the Twitter bird logo? Is it Tommy, Larry, Samuel, or Tweety? Which one is it? Tommy, Larry, Samuel, or Tweety?
Tweety?
You're going to say it's Tweety. That makes sense. But it's actually Larry. It's actually Larry. And believe it or not, it's named after the great Celtic, Larry Bird. We could have used him in the game against the Raptors last night, but that's basketball and not birds. Megan, stay on the line, and we'll get your info and send you those nifty prizes.
Hey, thank you.
Okay. Megan, in Mountain View, I think she said Arkansas, correctly identifying the Arctic tern. And guess what? We have just about exhausted our time on the show. Due to a scheduling mix-up, courtesy of yours truly, our latest Book Nest feature installment got delayed a bit, but love is worth waiting for. And next week, our resident reviewer, Susan Edwards Richmond, will be here to tell us about a new book called Bird Love. And shortly after that, we'll have another great friend of ours and one of our favorite guests, John Kreischer. He's written the new Peterson Reference Guide to Bird Behavior, and he'll be with us here in a couple of weeks from now. Thanks to our amazing Talking Birds team, Debbie Bleacher, Freya McGregor, our assistant Audrey Stack, and our producing engineer, Jesse Wilkins. I'm Ray Brown. Happy Labor Day weekend, and see you next week.
Ray Brown's Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store. Orleans, Cape Cod. Birdwatchersgeneralstore.com.
And proudly sponsored by Ocean State Bird Club. There are good things ahead here in Rhode Island as we hatch safe and creative ways to keep in touch with our members. Get the latest sightings and birding-related events, whether they're in person or virtual. Find us on Facebook and online at OceanStateBirdClub.org. Ocean State Bird Club.